Hello and welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Leisure Link podcast. My name is Joe, and on today's episode, we have Emma Selwyn talking with Robin Stewart, an artist, speaker, and musician, amongst other things. She writes books about autism, does visual art, draws and makes animations, teaches people about autism, and has a BBC podcast that she co-hosts. She can also see that music has a lot of healing power that can really help people when they're feeling sad and alone. She is also trying to influence the music industry in a wider way. So relax and enjoy.
This is the Leisure Link podcast. The Leisure Link podcast!
Hi all, welcome back to this episode of the Leisure Link podcast. My name's Emma Selwyn, and today I'm going to be interviewing Robin Rocket, aka Robin Stewart. Welcome to Leisure Link, Robin.
Thanks so much for having me. I've been listening to the Leisure Link podcast, and I think it's a great thing, so I'm really happy to be a guest. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you. We're glad you've been listening to it. So how did you hear about gig buddies, first of all?
I think I heard about gig buddies through the Stay Up Late campaign. Mm-hmm. Because Richard Phoenix, who started the Rock House in Brighton and for a while lived in London and worked with, or still does work with, Heart and Soul. And Richard, like Heart and Soul, invited me to be part of their artist development program in 2017. And Richard was like one of the people who I thought it would be good for me to like learn from. So I think I learned about Stay Up Late from him probably. But also because it's like, I think the disability arts scene is in some ways, at least in the Southeast, seems quite well connected. Like this seems like, you know, because we can travel to each other's events, so we see each other. So I learned about gig buddies, yeah, through the Stay Up Late. And I think also I felt like, because I put on my own nights, that it was really important to me that, you know, we did have nights that would go on until 11 o'clock and people would be able to stay out. And now we can stream it so people can watch it at home. But for me, like that whole ethos and also the whole, just the idea of gig buddies was something that was really important to me because it took me a long time, but I have friends now who like the same kind of music as me and I can go out with them, but I had to like learn how to go to gigs and I found that really hard. And if someone could have shown me those things, I think I would have had a better time earlier on.
Oh, I hear you on that. I hear you on feeling like you need to learn how to do things, Robin, but thank you. It's so cool just how connected things seem to be to each other, you know?
Yeah, I do think though that it's, because we're in the Southeast, so like we're connected to like Brighton's, you know, easy to get to on the train, and London is, you know, has plenty of public transport. But I feel like we don't know as much about like what happens in, say, the Northwest. Like I know Mind the Gap is in Leeds, but I'm sure there must be other organizations up there. And also one thing I think about a lot is there must be a lot, like I know loads of artists with learning disabilities and autistic artists in the London and Southeast area. There must be loads all over the country, but I don't feel so connected to other bits of the country. I think, you know, if I lived in Suffolk still, which is where I grew up, it's very rural, I think I'd feel very disconnected. I think we are very lucky, but I think it's us rather than everyone, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. You mentioned that you grew up in Suffolk. Is it okay for me to ask whereabouts you were?
I grew up in a really small village. One of them was almost like a hamlet called Ubberston Green, and it was named after King Ub. I know nothing about King Ub apart from that, that's where the name came from. And then after that, I moved to this tiny little village called Cratfield, which is spelt Crat Field, not Crap Field. It's crat. I, the nearest shop is like, 3 miles away, and the nearest train station, 7 miles away. Nearest big supermarket is 7 miles away. The nearest train to London direct is 15 miles away. So it's all quite a lot. So from Croydon, in terms of distances from Croydon, is probably like 7 miles from Croydon. I don't know actually. That's probably central London, I'd thought. But Croydon's so well connected that, where my parents lived, they don't have buses. They used to have a bus once a week. So like you can't really compare it to London, because you can't get anywhere unless you drive or cycle. And I've lived in London for about 12 years, so I have a bit of an accent now. People always think I'm from London.
Some listeners out there might not be familiar with who you are or what you do. So you've mentioned that you are a musician.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
What else? What other kind of things do you do?
I do a lot of things. I think the fancy word for it is gig promoter, but basically, I put on gigs. I choose bands to play, and I pay them, and they come, and the audience paid to come, and that's I just kind of make it happen. So I do that. They're called Robin's Rockets. And what I wanted Robin's Rocket to be was something that would be, I've used the word because I don't know how. I think there might be a better way of saying this, but for now I've been calling it inclusive conscious. And it's about, when you say something and you don't think it's going to upset someone, but you upset the person by accident. And they say that, like when you said that thing, you unconsciously upset them because you didn't know that that's what was going to happen. So when you're inclusive conscious, it means that you're thinking about it, rather than not thinking about it. And the inclusive, I don't think it's just about disability. It's about like I make experimental music and like experimental music. And when you go to experimental music gigs, they're often filled with white, middle-aged, middle-class men. And obviously that group of people shouldn't be stopped from enjoying that music, but other people should be able to enjoy it too. And other artists who are in different groups of people should be able to perform as well. And so it's about finding out like what is it, say, that makes women feel uncomfortable in the spaces like that, or what is it that stops promoters from booking disabled artists, like those kinds of things. And so I wanted to make nights that would be like how I wish I could have gone to gigs when I first started going out. And also to try and influence the music industry like wider, which I'm starting to do now in a small way, because I think there's a lot of things that can be put in place that are very cheap and easy to do that would make everybody have a better time at a gig. And it could be something simple like turning the lights up at the break so that people can see to get to the toilet and move around the space. Like it doesn't have to be like expensive or anything. And it's just like, yeah, just thinking about different people's needs and how more people can enjoy different kinds of music.
Yeah, and turning the lights up is a small example of an inclusion measure that would potentially save on the bills, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I
Yeah.
think so.
Yeah, because it's less likely that people are going to fall down steps and then sue. So yeah, so I do that. I write books about autism. I've written three. There's one about self-employment, one about safety, and one about periods. I do visual art. I draw, and make animation sometimes. I teach people about autism because I have autism. And I have a BBC podcast that I co-host with Jamie and Lion.
When you first started making music, are there songs that you created at the beginning of your career which you still play? And if there are, do you play them the same ways that they were when you first created them, or do you adapt them every time? I feel a bit weird asking because I know you're experimental, but do you have like any specific notes or styles or other elements of music that you focus on or feel particularly drawn to?
Yeah, so I'd say that really experimental just means that you don't just think about like making things that that have the song structure that most people know about, like verse, chorus, and so on. And also that you might focus more on like sounds rather than, you know, the kind of tune it's making, like the quality of a different sound, you know, like different fridges, say, make different noises, you know, like just your home fridge or like when my freezer turns on, it makes a different noise to someone else's freezer. So I think experimental music is really just about being aware of sounds and how those sounds interact with each other. When I first started, it's interesting you ask about the beginning of my career, because I started as a singer-songwriter. I don't do a massive amount of gigs like that, but the songs that I wrote at that time, I'd still play them in the same way. I have maybe more, now I have more skills in terms of I play the guitar a bit and I can play the bass a bit and I can use computer software a bit. So I can make things sound the way I want them to sound. So if I was going to perform those songs again, I probably would perform them pretty much in the same way as I did when I wrote them, because for me they're songs that are kind of specific to a particular time of my life. I wrote them in my early 20s and now I'm 35 and I feel like I can't really I feel like I can't change them now. The sentiments of those songs are still there, but I mainly now I play the trumpet, and I actually started the trumpet when I was 8. When you're little, you play a smaller version of the trumpet called a cornet, which is it's used a lot in like brass bands and things like that. And I played that between the age of 8 and 15, but I really struggled with like music being written down, and also having to play things written exactly as they are. In my own free time, I had a keyboard and I was writing my own songs. But then when I'd like go to my piano teacher and show them the song I've written, they just kind of like made me feel like my songs were just too weird. And then, you know, when like 10 or 20 years later, I realized, oh no, there's loads of people, you know, like Frank Zappa, some of his songs are really weird. People like them because of that. When I was growing up, I stopped playing basically the cornet when I was 15. And then I didn't pick it up again really until I was 27. And I went to this place called Morley College, which maybe some people have heard of. It's an adult education college in Waterloo.
Isn't it near Elephant and Castle, I think? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, yes. It's technically it's opposite Lambeth North train station.
Yeah.
Tube station. So it is near Elephant and Castle. Yeah. I think now they've merged with, I think, Chelsea and Westminster College. And so I think they call that their Waterloo campus, but you're quite right. It's more nearer Elephant and Castle, I think. So I went there to a big band, and the guy that ran the beginner's big band at the time was called Tony. And Tony taught me that you don't have to just learn music written down. You can learn the rules of music just by learning what different sounds are and the relationship between different sounds. Mm. A bit like, you know how a police car, when it's got the siren on, it sounds different when you're close to it to when it's further away. So it's kind of like that with like notes that you can make, that the further they are from the note you started on, they'll sound different because the relationship to the first note is different. Mm. Just like when the police car is next to you, the sound is a lot louder. And when it's further away, the sound seems like it's a bit longer and quieter. Mm. So I learned from Tony about learning scales. And in Western music, a lot of music that's like made in the US and the UK and that kind of thing, as rather than music that's made in, like, say, Japan or India or China, the Western music often uses scales, which is just patterns. And so I learned the main scales, and then I went to a workshop and I learned how to improvise, and then I started going out and playing with people. And then I'm really at the moment very inspired by someone called Alabaster de Plume. I'm gonna spell that because it's really long and hard. So it's Alabaster, and then a new word, D-E, and then another new word, P-L-U-M-E. And Alabaster de Plume, for 10 years, worked with people with learning difficulties in Manchester, and now he's a musician and he's kind of getting quite famous. He was on a BBC documentary. Anyway, what he does is he has a bunch of songs, like there's one called I Want a Red Car, and I Want a Red Car has got this, like, saxophone bit that always stays the same, and there's the verse is always the same, but then the musicians often improvise around it. So I'm trying to kind of do things like that now, whereas before I was just making it up and it was always different every time.
Yeah.
Now I have like a 4 or 5 note structure. Like a good example of that is I made a piece of music called It's Okay to Be Scared, and it was inspired by on the news they said that parents were wondering how to tell their children about the war in Ukraine, and I think, you know, through a child's eye, probably it might even be more scary than it might be for adults, because we've got more experience. So I wanted to, like, I was just thinking about that, and so that piece of music has got about 7 notes in it that are always the same, and the rest of it I can, when I'm doing it live, I just make it up.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it would make sense that a child might find war harder than an adult. And thank you, I love how much detail you've got into this. You clearly put a lot of thought into what you do, even when you're just winging it, you know?
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you. I think it's all about practice. It's just like playing football. Like, you, when you're doing all your practices and you're learning keepy uppies and, you know, bouncing the ball on your head, or, you know, being able to dribble around cones or whatever, those things, when they're on their own, they are maybe a bit boring. But then when you're in a match and you need to use those skills, then you're just, you because you practice them, they are there like muscle memory. So I think with music, for me, it's the same. I can see that music has a lot of healing power. Like, it can really help people. Like, when they're feeling sad, they can listen to music and it can help them, or if they're feeling really alone. And I think also that music can be for more people than just spoken words. There's a BBC journalist called Alan Johnston, and he got kidnapped when he was, I'm not sure if he was in Iraq or Afghanistan, but he was somewhere that wasn't the UK, and he was kidnapped. And he managed somehow to get a radio, and while he was being held captive, he used to listen to the BBC World Service, and so he'd hear them talk about him. But I know that that was comforting to him. And also my cousin, he broke his leg when he was in China, and he was in a tent in China, and he heard me on the World Service. But that is both of those, but the World Service is, you know, mostly in English. And I know that the BBC does have other language stations, but I think the thing about music is kind of doesn't have to matter about the words. Like, I think you could enjoy, like, Alabaster de Plume, another example, has a whole album of just instrumentals, so there's no words at all. It's called To Cy, which is C-Y, and Lee, and that's the name of two people that he used to support. And it's really a beautiful album, doesn't have any words in it, and you can just listen to it and feel really relaxed. So for me, I think a lot about music and how I present it, because I feel really passionate about that it can have a positive impact on other people. And also that for me, music has always been really important in my life. It's how I learned to talk. It's how I made friends. It's like really important to me.
Yeah. I think I truly do think music can be incredibly transformative. And I'll share a little story of how music's helped me in a way. I used to be a fan, maybe still am, not sure yet. Story about music that's helped me in a way. A good while ago now, I was really, really into this band called Mindless Self-Indulgence. So very punk, very in your face. And they just basically didn't really care about things. In 10 years, I saw them about 10 times, maybe a bit less than that. And it was thanks to them, in a way, that I felt able to go to just this random place in Nottingham or Cardiff or wherever, just somewhere that I would never have dreamt of going normally, purely to see some music I've loved. What do you think has been your biggest challenge, and what do you think's been your biggest highlight?
I think that my biggest highlight has probably been working with Heart and Soul, who I'm sure some of your listeners know. They're in Deptford, and they believe in the power and talents of people with learning disabilities and autistic people, as well as being part of their artist development program, which was amazing, and meeting loads of people, and being a part of a community. Also, they gave me my first proper job. Like, I mean, I've been self-employed a long time, but to have something that I always get paid every month is amazing. And I think, I definitely feel very thankful for that and all the support that they've given me. But also the community of artists is amazing. Both the facilitators and the Heart and Soul artists, everyone is really supportive. Nobody, there's no ego, there's no one goes, oh well, how come they get to do this, or how come they get to do that. We're all cheering each other on, and I really love that. And about how many different styles there are and how much work people do. I'm part of a project with Dean Rodney Jr., who's an amazing musician and songwriter, and we've been booked for festivals like Jupiter Rising, Contrapop, and Supernormal in August. And I'm just in his band as a trumpet player, and I love that. I think maybe my biggest challenge was maybe finding people that could help guide me, because I'm quite, I like to get on with things. If I had a catchphrase, it would probably be get on with it. sometimes, as an artist, you need someone to kind of tell you what you need to do. So like the other day, Richard Phoenix said, oh, you know, why don't you write to the podcasts or radio shows that you listen to that you like, and, you know, choose some music that you think they would like, and like ask them if it's okay to send them something and tell them why you like their show. And if it's okay, you know, send them a link to your Bandcamp to a specific track. And like, that was really helpful advice. But I think also like working with Cafe Oto, it's actually pronounced Oto, but everyone says Oto, but Oto is a Japanese word for sound. And working with them, like they're a very cool place. And, you know, I'm kind of not that cool. Like, I don't really have friends when I was a kid. Like, if Cafe Oto was a person when they were growing up at school, they'd have loads of friends and be really popular. That was not what I was like at school. So I feel like having Heart and Soul behind me has meant it's opened doors. I think the polite way of saying it might be courage, but the way I would describe it is that I have quite a lot of balls. Like, I'll stand up for myself. Like, I'll do things that scare me because I think, well, that's the only way of getting on. And that's been very helpful. You know, it's possible to throw your balls in the wrong place. So it's really good to have someone to guide you, to help you, to be able to know, like, what to do and how to do it. Or like when I started Robin's Rocket, it was in a basement in Deptford, and like Richard Phoenix like helped me write like a step by step what I actually needed to do, and even things like how to ask somewhere if I can put a poster up, like that kind of thing. Like, and they seem simple to other people, but like Richard has loads of experience of putting posters up. Like, I just needed a script to like talk to someone to say, please can I put my poster up. And it seems really simple, but actually, like, when it's your first time doing something, for me anyway, I find I don't know what to do and I can get it wrong socially. And it's good if someone can like tell me what I should do. And I don't think I don't want people to think that, because I think that I think with gig buddies, like, I think in the future we're going to have people with learning disabilities buddied up with other people with learning disabilities and autistic people, because I don't think it's that having a learning disability or being autistic means you can't do these things. I think maybe it makes it more of a challenge, but I think that's starting to change now.
I really hope that can be more of a thing in the future as well. So if you wanted to, if you had anything you wanted to say to anyone considering being an artist as a learning disabled or autistic person, or if they wanted to volunteer for an organisation similar to Gig Buddies, do you have any words of wisdom, balls, inspiration, anything like that?
I'd say go for it. Again, another Alabasta de Plume reference. I like his thinking a lot. He says, go forward in the courage of your love. And to me, I think what that means is if you really love something, then like do that thing. Like, to have courage is like to, you know, do something that might be a bit scary and to do it because you love it. It's, you know, like, it's like if you were a parent and your child really wanted to go on a roller coaster, you wouldn't want to stop them from trying something new. And even if you were scared because you love your child, you'd probably try and go on the roller coaster or try and find a way that your child would be able to go on the roller coaster, because you love them and because your love can give you courage to be able to do the things that might be a bit scary. So I'd say that, yeah, go forward and encourage your love is a pretty good, I think they call it a mantra or catchphrase. He also says, don't forget you're precious, which, I mean, you could take that as a negative thing, but I think what it means is that your life is very precious and that we're very lucky to be ourselves, and we're very lucky to know the people we know and love the people we love and be loved by the people who love us.
Those are such good words.
I mean, to be fair, they're alabaster de plumes words. he's a poet and he's very good with words. I'm more kind of in your face of like, well, yeah, my catchphrase is get on with it. Like, if you want to do something, you know, you just have to just get on with it. Like, just do it because life is very short. And what spurred me on as an artist was when David Bowie died. I realised I was turning 30 and how important art was to me and that that's what I really wanted to be doing. And here I am 5 years later and, you know, I'm progressing and it's slow and I wish I'd been able to do this like 10 years ago, but here I am and I feel like I'm, you know, I'm moving forward. And I do think a lot of success in life is really about who you're connected to, and the more connections you can have, the better.
Yeah. So actually spreading your message and the courage of your love out to pretty much everyone you can, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yes. I'm a National Autistic Society ambassador. So I think the ambassadors do lots of different things, but what that means really is I quite like doing live TV and live radio. So if they can't find anyone else, or if I'm a really good fit for a story that a journalist is doing, they'll ring me up and I'll go and I've like done Channel 4 News and BBC News and things like that. And my message really is about empathy and about understanding other people and yeah, going forward in the courage of your love. Exactly.
And getting on with it too.
Yeah, and getting on with it. Yeah, I mean, that's how that media thing started, because I don't know how I got the invite, but I got invited to the press launch of I Exist, which was a campaign that aimed to help people be aware that there were autistic adults in the world and that autism's a spectrum. And I just volunteered myself to help with press, and I met this really nice lady called Gemma, and Gemma helped me out. Like she gave me her email address and I emailed her and I phoned her and yeah, got on with putting myself forward, because I felt like whenever my parents took me on a long car journey, I'm an only child, I don't have any brothers or sisters, and they used to give me a dictaphone because I talked a lot, and my parents would say I have verbal diarrhea and but they didn't always want to talk to me, because you know, sometimes we'd go on a car journey and it might be like 6 hours and there's only so much two people can put up with, so they'd give me a dictaphone, and so I started like making my own radio shows on the dictaphone, and I used to do theme music and I used to like pretend that I was interviewing guests, and I learned, that's why I speak the way I speak, I think, when I'm doing stuff on radio or a podcast, because I used to, when I didn't say something quite right, when I stumbled a bit, I would just rewind the tape and then record over it and make it as perfect as I could, so I think that's where my confidence comes from, because I spent hours as a kid talking to a microphone and then listening to it back, and my parents just learned to zone out from it, and it kept me occupied for hours and hours and hours.
That's a good way to get some practice in. So you mentioned also that you're gigging.
I've got a gig in Brighton on July the 7th at the Rossi Bar, which is spelt R-O-S-S-I, and it's, I don't know what the road is called, it goes from the station to the sea, but it's on that road. And then the one after that, I've got a couple of things in Strasbourg in France in June, but that's a long way to go. and then I've got there's a DJ night at Café Otto on the 19th of August, which is mostly heart and soul DJs, but also Mika Levi, who is a DJ and musician. And then September the 15th is the Beautiful Octopus Club at the Albany in Deptford, and Robin's Rocket will have a stage. Every weekend, apart from the first weekend in August, I'm at a festival with Dean Rodney's band. Like the 13th and 14th is Supernormal. And then I think the weekend off Then the weekend after that is Jupiter rising in Scotland, and the weekend after that, the 20th and 21st, is Contrapop. And then it's, so September is Robin's Rocket at the Albany. It's part of the Beautiful Octopus Club. And then there's a bit of a gap. I'm sure there'll be some gigs that come up, but I haven't planned that far ahead. And then November is the last Robin's Rocket of the year. It'll be the 17th of November, and it's part of the EFG Jazz Festival.
Sounds like you've got a pretty full calendar then. How can people find more out about you? Do you have a social media pages or a website?
Yeah, I have both. Yep. If you type in Robin's Rocket into Google, you should find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and the Robin's Rocket website. The way you spell Robin is a bit different because it's the girl version of Robin. It's spelled R like
Romeo?
Yeah, like Romeo. Yeah, like Romeo. Yeah, yeah. Like Romeo, yeah. O like orange. B like ball, Y like yellow, and N like November. And then rocket is spelt like space rocket. So R-O-C-K-E-T. So there is a website, robinsrocket.com. And if you type it into any social media like Instagram or Facebook or anything like that, you'll find me.
Thank you. And also, while I think about it, do you have a Bandcamp or... is your music on Spotify or anything like that? How can people...
Well, it's really good you asked that. So through Heart and Soul, I've very luckily been able to work with a music publisher called Bucks Music. And they publish people like Brian Eno. It's amazing to be published by them. And what that means is that my music will be on Spotify and all the other like digital places you can get music at the moment. That will happen, I think it might be tomorrow, which is exciting. But in the meantime, there's my Bandcamp, which is Hattonauts, which is spelled H like Harry, A like Ant, T like Tommy, O like Orange, N like November, A like Apple, U like umbrella, T like Tommy, S like sugar, hattonauts.com. And that will take you to my Bandcamp.
Hattonauts.com and Spotify tomorrow. Awesome.
Yeah.
And do you know when you're on Spotify, do you know if you'll be under Hattonauts, Robin's Rocket, or?
I'll be under Robin Rocket.
Robin Rocket. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, then. I'll make sure to check all that out. Thanks very much for coming on and talking with us, Robin. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to chat to you, and please keep up the great work.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
This is the Leisure Link Podcast. The Leisure Link Podcast!
Now we're going to hear one of my tracks. It's called Octopi Can Help Babies. And this is a piece of music that I just made up. It's all improvisation. I didn't plan it. And it's about how when a baby's premature, and I was a premature baby, they are in the hospital and their mum and dad can't stay with them all the time. And people have started knitting and crocheting octopuses and squid for the babies to hold, because it's thought that the tentacles remind the baby of the umbilical cord, and that helps them to calm down, and it improves a lot of the oxygen in their blood.
Thank you.
That was Octopi Help Babies by Robin Stewart. Well, that's it for our podcast. I'd like to thank Emma and Robin for today's podcast and hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like any information about the Leisure Link podcast, please contact www.clubsoda.org.uk. So enjoy the summer and see you on the next Leisure Link podcast.